to the Women Boldly Living podcast, the place where you can learn simple, practical tools on ways to thrive in life as professional women and working moms. Give yourself permission to take the next few moments to be encouraged by me, your host, Valerie Astrid Brown. You see, I've been that woman thinking that it's too late and I'm too old to be what I might have been. Now, as a transition coach and empowerment speaker, a change management and leadership development expert, I invite you to pretend that we're having a chat about the frustrations as well as the joys of midlife over a nice glass of iced tea. I'm super excited that you're here and we're going to get started. But before I get started with today's show, I want to thank my sponsor, the Brown family, in honor of the legacy of Mr. Llewellyn Brown. So as I said, I'm excited about today's show. I'm excited about the guest all the way from Atlanta, Georgia, Bertine West. Bertine, thank you very much for joining us today. How are you?
Hello, Valerie. I'm doing great. I'm doing great and happy to be here. Thank you for having me on the show today.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being here. It's a pleasure to have you. And Bertine, I'm going to ask you to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, about you, what you're doing, maybe even your family, because the title of our show today is Self-Care and the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Professionals, Different Strategies That We Need to Know. So tell the listeners about you, your family, and the work you're doing.
Well, excellent, excellent. Well, my name is Bertine Crevecoeur-West, and I'm the Chief Executive Officer of a learning and development company called Westbridge Solutions. And so the work that I do is focusing on conflict resolution, and that also includes cultural competency as well as DEI, because the way to resolve a conflict is usually through one of those paths, as well as soft skills training. So I'm also a wife and a mom. My son is this precocious, amazing kid who also happens to have autism. And so part of the reason why I started this work was because I wanted to create a space that was open to neurodiversity and looking at all of the wonderful gifts that children have, as well as acknowledge the challenges faced by this specific underrepresented population. So having said that, I'm also in a marriage that is intercultural and interethnic. Mm-hmm. So my family happens to be from Haiti. My husband's family happens to be from Jamaica. And so people usually think that those two islands are so similar. Everybody thinks that unless you know a Haitian and Jamaican, or unless you are yourself. And you start to see that the cultures are very different. The only thing that we honestly have in common is that we are both from the Caribbean. But as a Haitian American, I'm also a Latin person. And so, you know, there's a lot of layers of diversity going on. Even in our home, we have a multitude of languages that we speak amongst ourselves. And so that too is another layer of diversity, right? So I don't know if I chose diversity, equity, and inclusion, or it chose me. So that's my life, and really the company started all around that, and really wanting people to have better conversations, such as the one we're having today, which I think is so poignant. The topic is something that we don't explore enough. So, you know, I am grateful that you're opening up the space so we can share this information together and hopefully provide people with some tips that they can use for themselves.
Yes, that is good. I like what you said about, you know, your life really being diverse. And I feel the same way now that you mentioned that about being married, because I am from the U.S., born and raised here in the U.S., but my husband is actually Panamanian. So I went across the waters, or he came across the waters and found me, I should say. And that whole cultural thing there, and that diversity in our marriage, I'm thinking about it now, it's really a diverse marriage, because Panama is a third world country. So I know exactly what you're talking about with the differences that you may have, and then people thinking that there will be a lot of similarities because you all are from the islands, but then there are a lot of differences. So that's good. And I love what you said about the layers of language. languages. Are you going to tell the listeners how many languages you speak?
Exactly. I happen to speak four. But I should point out that although I was born in the United States, I didn't learn English until I was 5 years old. And that's not uncommon with a lot of kids growing up in multilingual households. But I also left when I was 2 months old, came back when I was 2.5. And in Haiti, you start school earlier and you stay in school longer. It's just a longer academic trajectory. And so I basically was in, I want to say it was pre-K or kindergarten in Haiti. And then when you come here, you have to wait until you're 5. So it, I basically didn't have any exposure to English until kindergarten, literally the first day. And my babysitters were Cuban and Colombian. So my world was a rich and wonderful one, but I was an American who didn't speak English. And I always find that that is a humbling position to be in, to always remind myself of that, because it helps me have greater empathy for our limited English proficiency population. And so I remember learning English, and I remember, you know, knowing that I didn't know the language these kids were speaking. But because I was so little, I also thought, well, why don't they know French? Like, what's that all about?
Yeah.
And why don't they know Haitian Creole? So I didn't even think to consider that, you know, I'm in another country and I have to acclimate myself to a new culture. But it's innately my own culture as well that I just was not familiar with.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So we're talking today about self-care for DEI professionals and these strategies that we need to know. I'm in the field as well as a consultant, so I thought it was really important that we talk about this today, as you mentioned earlier. Due to the time that we're in, it seems like it has gotten just popular. It's the next thing, and it is very hot, although it should have been hot many years ago, but that's totally another podcast. But
yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. We can have a whole conversation about that.
Exactly. We can have a whole conversation. So I have to bring you back on to talk about that piece. Like, why are we just getting to a place where we can talk about this like we are? But for our listeners that don't necessarily know what diversity, equity, and inclusion is, what those terms mean, provide some insight on that. On what you see diversity, equity, and inclusion is.
Absolutely. Well, in my opinion, and I guess many of the DEI professionals out there, and I'm going to use real layman's terms, diversity is about having different faces at the table, right? Having different outlooks, having different mindsets. Whereas inclusion focuses on more of a culture of belonging by actively inviting the contribution of other people. And then equity seeks to ensure fair treatment and equality of opportunity. So it's about who's there, that's a diversity component. It's about how are they being made to feel as if they're a part of wherever they are, that's inclusion. And then is there fairness and access to whatever resources that group is providing. That's the equity component.
Yeah. I love that. I love how you put that in layman's terms, because we know in a lot of our work, we have these challenging terms and so many acronyms. And I love it when people can just break them down to where a child can understand it. So I like that. The topic of racism, diversity, and inclusion are very complex. They're uncomfortable and also triggering. They trigger a lot of emotions, but they can be loving and compassionate as well. And we need to become, or it needs to become, a part of everyday life and our everyday interactions. So before we even dig into the self-care practices for DEI professionals, can you share with us how we can make anti-racism a daily practice?
Absolutely. And Valerie, I love what you said about diversity also having, while it's difficult work, having a component of love in it, right? And mm-hmm, I like to liken yeah. that to a garden. And I say diversity is dirty business. You've got to roll your sleeves up and get in there and to really have some clarity and some actionable items. So I liken it to a garden where, you know, you have to use fertilizer. You have to tend the soil with your hand, and it requires care, and it requires attention. It requires attentiveness and intentionality. And then at the end, you know, if we are lucky enough, if we are resilient enough, if we are strong enough, we end up with a beautiful garden. And so that's my whole view of how it is to train DEI and be part of that. But I also, I think I went off on a tangent. So can you repeat the question? Because I don't want to go too far off on a tangent.
Yeah, no, it's okay. It is okay, because remember, we're having a conversation and I'm loving it. You are providing so much insight already, but I wanted us to talk about how we can make anti-racism a daily practice.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you for bringing me back there. So yes, anti-racism is really something that, in my opinion, is an action. It's an action word, as opposed to unconscious bias training that I don't have anything against whatsoever. But the time is now for us to pivot from something that is passive to something that is active, right? And anti-racism means, you know, of course you want to know what's not okay to say, but it's about, when are we standing up? It's about standing up, period, right? And anyone can be an anti-racist. You don't have to, you know someone or be married to someone or, you know, fill in whatever blank. Anti-racism means that, an example would be if you and your friends are, you know, hanging out and somebody's telling an off-color joke, but you know in your heart of hearts that that joke is harmful and offensive. There doesn't need to be the person who is the butt of the joke, be it a stereotypical joke, as an example, doesn't need to be present for you to take a stand and say, no, this is not okay. We can't use this language, right? It's not cool. And anti-racist will do that. So my mom always used to say, dress for the part that you want, not the part that you have, right? So let's say you're an ally, but you want to be an anti-racist. You have to dress for the part of the anti-racist, because you never know who's watching. And it doesn't even matter if someone's watching. You're watching you. And you know when you've let yourself down. And we all know how that feels when we've encouraged a conversation, or even worse, we haven't said anything and we let that conversation go. It's harmful to the person that is making the comment, even if they may not know it. It's harmful to the group in general, and it's harmful to the targeted person or group of people that they're making that joke about. So an anti-racist is somebody that is an action doer, right? Is somebody that's actively and intentionally seeking to dispel with language that is inappropriate, this language that is harmful. And that's another way that we can actively be an anti-racist, is to change our vernacular. Political correctness in this country is not the friend of cultural competency. It really isn't, because it allows us to use terms that are vague, inaccurate, and honestly, just plain wrong. And people think it's about being polite, but it's not about being polite. It's about having clarity. So how to actively be an anti-racist? Think about the words that we use, and what do those words really mean? And I like to use the example of race, ethnicity, and nationality. So I happen to be a Black woman. That's my race. I'm a Black woman. But I happen to also be Haitian, which is my ethnicity, and American, which is my nationality. But I'm not African American, even though I was born here, because that's a different nationality, right? So we can be in the same race, but it's like if I'm Irish and Italian, I happen to be white, but I'm not one or the other. I'm whatever I am, right? And so even, you know, us intentionally coming out of our silos, another way to be an active anti-racist is to leave your cultural and mental silo, engage with people that don't look like you, eat foods that you've not tried before, and, you know, don't hold your nose up at it. And I also want to preface this by saying these set of kind of tips that I'm giving right now, they're not only for white people.
They are not only for white people. And so it's important that we point out, you know, because I've had, growing up, particularly in New York, I've had people say harmful things about me who look like me, you know, and I was confused when I was a child because I was like, why are these kids teasing me? I look like them, right? And I didn't understand that. And then as I grew up, I realized ethnicity, nationality, that also plays a part. So I want people to understand that this type of anti-racist conversation, it's not just for somebody that doesn't look like you. It's for you. It's for me.
Yeah.
It's for all of us.
Yeah.
We have to hold ourselves accountable to a higher standard and a broader one at that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more with everything that you have said. I cannot agree more. And it seems like we'll probably have to bring you on for like the third time to even talk about the terminology that we have. We have to bring you in again because the terminology you talked about being a Black woman and then also being Haitian. And that reminds me of when we're working in the space, the names and the descriptions that are used, because for those women who are Black and are from the islands or could be from Hispanic countries as well, they do not identify with being African American. They identify with being, I've seen it in my space where they identify with being Black. So you're exactly right and spot on with all of that. And then I like what you said about leaving your culture and mental silos. And I think about my friends, and when I've been doing talks and everything and leading these Listen, Learn, Act sessions, I think about how some of the people have been in there and they really only have friends that look just like them. And I think in this space of pivoting over and taking action, it requires us to come out of our comfort zone and out of our own space and then reach out and intentionally, I like that word because we have to be intentional in this space and become friends with others that do not look like us. Do you follow?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. And it's a necessary thing to do because this, and I will say this because now you're bringing out the political scientist in me for sure. it's really the concept of race started out as something benevolent, but it is an American phenomenon. And so, you know, to your point about people identifying through nationality or ethnicity, if I go to France where some of my family lives, they are French, right? They identify by their nationality, but their ethnicity is Haitian, right? They don't identify as being Black, white, biracial, fill in the blank, right? And so this is an American phenomenon, and it started out benevolently enough where, insofar as people were trying to, the government, as it were trying to measure, you know, who was receiving services. And so that was a good categorization at the time. Now, that's all things being equal, because then, of course, we throw in slavery and everything else. But that's like 4 and 5 podcast episodes, right? So having said that, you know, it started out as a form of measurement in regards to services. But then, you know, it became something very corrupted. And so this is why we find ourselves in the current situation that we are in today. So when other people identify as Dominican, as Ethiopian, you're not seeing people identify as Black. Even myself, I identify as a Caribbean person, but also as a Latin person. And those things are not mutually exclusive, right? Just as your husband,
right?
He's a Latin person, but he's also a Black person, but he's also a husband. He's also fill in the blank, right? And so I think this is when the concept of intersectionality needs to be explored further. And that's not something people discuss enough. And I always think the unfortunate thing that people face here in the United States is that everything seems to be a binary choice, but you can be more than one thing at one time, and that can be perfectly fine. So the problem is in changing the mindset that this can exist. There can be, you know, a duality, a trilogy, a whatever, how many things you want to classify yourself as, that can exist. And this also holds true to our LGBTQ population. We have to create a space for them where, you know, it's not just male and female, gay and straight. Like, there's a spectrum of identities and orientations. And so, you know, if we are an ally for one, we must be an ally for all.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Gosh, okay, I like that. You have me thinking. You said that last part, the binary choice. Growing up in the South, I saw that displayed a lot. We were either black or white. And if you had anything, let's say if you were light skin, it was lots of questions about that, but it was simply, you know, black or white. And if you did not fit into that, or even if you came with an accent or anything like that, you just did not fit in. But maybe we can have that conversation offline. But yeah,
absolutely, absolutely.
You brought up some good points about that binary piece there. So I want us to dig a little bit deeper and go into self-care. And the reason being is because our job, your job as a DEI practitioner, can be understandably taxing. I know for me, I've been giving talks, speeches, trainings, workshops, and I'm sure you've been doing the same, because it's a hot topic now. We're talking racism, sexism, discrimination, all of those social inequities, and they can take a toll on individuals and doing and doing that. So what are some of the ways that DEI practitioners can de-stress and practice self-care that many of us so desperately need? What are some things that you're thinking we could do?
Okay, so that, I love that question. But I have to backtrack a little bit in order to kind of paint the picture, like set the foundation for the tips that I'm about to recommend. So one of my favorite quotes is from Socrates that says, "Know thyself," right? And I think that's a really important component. Like, we have to know ourselves. And so what I first suggest people do, take a self-assessment. Now, that could be a variety of things. There's something called Five Voices that's fantastic. There are DISC assessments that you can take. Find out what your personality type is, and then you will start to learn, especially I think with Five Voices, it's my favorite, but you will start to learn what your triggers are, right? You will start to learn how you respond to stress. You will start to see trends in your behavior, and you'll get to actually study and know yourself. Now, I'm sure there are a lot of assessments out there that I simply don't know about, but I'm talking about the ones that I like. You will start, and that I've gotten the most benefit from as well. You will start to know how you respond to stress, because you already know that information, but you've never had it laid out before you, right? And so you will start to see patterns and trends in what your responses to stress are, what those triggers are, and you know, you will also know, based upon, you know, a particular situation or a particular point in time, when you get stressed. And so when you know the why and the when, you're better able to address the how, right? How to get unstressed, right? And part of that is recognizing those triggers. And so then when you know how to get unstressed, you're able to engage in activities that will help you, and that will help bring out all of the self-care that you need, that will help create that self-care for you. So I always say, know yourself. And then by knowing yourself, you're able to not only lead yourself and others, but take care of yourself, you know? And for many of us, we have families, and I don't care if you're a parent of a fur baby or human people. Everybody's got something that is on their plate. And particularly during this time of COVID, during this time in particular of racial unrest and strife, it's really, really important for us to really take a moment, take a breath, and see what is triggering us. It's really important for us to do that, because we need to allow ourselves some grace. We work, as I said, in a dirty business where our hands literally are tilling the soil, you know, of human kindness, if you will. right? We're trying to grow that garden of empathy and of intentionality and of clarity. And that requires a lot of effort from our part and a lot of work. And so I always say, know yourself, then you'll know what triggers you. Then you'll know how to combat that. And that's your self-care plan. So for some people, that may be spending more time with family. During this time of quarantine, that may not be it, you know?
Right,
might be
right,
the opposite,
yeah.
Right? Because up might be down. So, you know, that might be taking a walk. It might be, you know, reading a book. It might be some form of exercise or some form of mental rest, or might be having conversations on a podcast. That's my happy spot, you know? It might be honestly throwing yourself into a different kind of work. Right. So for me, I'm an author and I enjoy doing that. So writing is a part of the way that I de-stress. It's therapeutic for me. And it's a way for me to help fulfill another side of my life that needs nurturing. Right. So whatever it is, you've got to name it and you've got to do it. And you have to be intentional about doing that. And one other thing I will also throw in there, make sure you block out some time for yourself, because everybody wants access to you, right? Especially now. But access to me is limited because I, especially these days, because I need to carve out time to recharge my batteries, right?
Yes.
And you're like this too. I know it because we work in the same industry. So, you know, we give and pour so much into others. And by the time we get back to our homes, we are spent, right? I'm a talker, clearly. But there comes a time where I'm like, nope, I got to plug myself back into the charger. And for me, that means quiet time. It means a time for me to just have some self-reflection. And it might mean a Netflix night. You know, I am not judging. I say do what works, because if you don't do what works, you're the only one that's going to be broken. And that's not okay, because then you can't help anybody. Yeah, so that was the long version, I think, right?
No,
the long answer.
It is quite all right, because you answered the question. I love that you start out about knowing thyself. It's very important. Self-awareness, I keep coming back to this, that self-awareness is so important for us moving forward, just knowing ourselves, knowing what we value, even going a step further and even having like our statement of what our life represents. And I think when we have that up close and just front and center, we tend to operate and gravitate towards those things. And it's all a part of what you said, that the first thing is knowing thyself. So I've used this example before, and it's like when we were flying, we would put on our mask first, right? Before we help anyone else. And this just all goes into what you were saying with knowing thyself first, and then you can move on to these other things and taking care of yourself and implementing and being intentional with the self-care that we want. So this is really good. I am loving the gems that you're dropping for the listeners today. And with that, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with my guest, Bertine Crevecoeur-West. She is a conflict resolution strategist, author, and award-nominated podcast host. And we're talking today about self-care and DEI professionals, these strategies that you need to know. So hang on there, and we will be right back after this commercial.
This is Donetta D. Morris. I am so excited. And I welcome you to my new podcast, Rest Leads to Revenue. This will be an outstanding podcast for entrepreneurs and business owners. This podcast is an extension of my book, 21 Days to Improve Your Sleep Hygiene and Lose Weight. This podcast will educate, enlighten, and encourage you to take charge of your sleep with respect as an entrepreneur and business owner. Gain energy you need to take the business to the next level. I welcome you to tune into my podcast every Friday. You won't regret it.
This is Valerie Ashford Brown, CEO and founder of Leading Edge Coaching and Consultant. I'm a certified professional coach, empowerment speaker, change management and leadership development expert, assisting women going through a life change. I transition you from a place of overwhelm to a place of overflow so you can start living and stop merely existing. Are you looking to change careers or trying to go back to work after a long break or even feeling stuck? Have you said to yourself that you're too old, it's too late, and things just won't happen for me? Are you tired of juggling your faith, your family, and yourself, often getting nowhere fast? If you desire to reawaken and reignite your purpose, I invite you to connect with me. I assist clients by using the SHIFT method to move to the next level. You may contact me at 240-681-9375. And you can also email me at info@valerieashfordbrown.com. And you can visit my website at valerieashfordbrown.com. And finally, I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn as the same name, valerieashfordbrown.com. I look forward to hearing from you soon. Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining me again. We're talking with my guest today, Bertine Crevecoeur-West, conflict resolution strategist, author, and award-nominated podcast host. We're talking about self-care and the DEI professional strategies you need to know. And before we dropped off for our break, Bertine was telling us about different strategies that we could take as practitioners in the diversity, equity, and inclusion space. So we were just talking about knowing ourselves, and we're going to take that conversation a little deeper in that we know that for those of us in this space, and even others, it even goes beyond the diversity space, for just in general in life, that self-care is really important. But in the diversity space, it can be the difference between your retention and your success, because the work is one that can be somewhat taxing. And the most important person to the work that you do is actually you. And you must be your biggest cheerleader. I'm big on being my own cheerleader. But Bertine, how can non-DEI professionals support their colleagues, their DEI colleagues and friends? How can those professionals support them, our friends that are not in the space, our family that are not in the space? What can they do to support us?
I love that question so much. And I have two pathways to that. So the first is, don't treat us like we're attorneys and you need free advice, right? Because once we're done with work, we need that time to be really separate. Now, I don't mind having, you know, DEI conversations about particular topics with some friends and some family members, but what I'm not going to do is go into this mega deep dive, because that's what I've been doing all day. On social media, I don't engage in DEI conversation. I'm also an adjunct political science professor, and I don't talk politics on social media, because this is the work that I have to do every day. And while I love it, I also need a break from it, right? So I would say, once your DEI loved one comes home or is on a Zoom call with you, with your group of friends, if you're texting, understand that we may not always want to talk about that. At the end of the day, I am more than my profession. I am more than my passion for my work. I'm a girl from Queens, New York, who married a guy and had a kid. I wanted to go to the supermarket, bring home groceries, and eat dinner, right? Yes. I don't always, there's a time for it, and there's also a time for other things. So I think it's really important to not make your and I will use that term again, your DEI loved one, right? Because we're somebody's loved one. I will not, I don't think that's an appropriate time, especially now in these chaotic times that we're experiencing and evolving through as a society collectively. There is a time for us to have a break. So we're on a lot, and the work that we do requires heart work as well as head work, right? It requires us to use our intellect as well as our emotions. So we need a time to unplug. So allow us that time. And I dare say this is advice that one can use in life in general, right? So like when somebody comes home from work, give them some time to just unplug rather than, can you take out the trash? Can you make dinner? Can you do this? Can you do that? Right? This could be used for kids too. You know, you just got home from the bus. All right, have some time. Go change your clothes. Go wash your hands. Relax a little. And then we're going to talk about, you know, your day, and you can do your homework and all that stuff. But so we all need some buffer time, some downtime to transition into that next phase of our life. And the other would be, you know, on the flip side of it, when we do need to talk about, you know, a hard day or a particular training that we went through, or, you know, and of course I preface this by saying, you know, we don't divulge any information about, you know, people that attend our trainings and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, but when we do need to talk about a difficult situation, because sometimes the things we have to train to get our audiences to see that bigger picture, that's something that is difficult for us. That might be a trigger for us. That might be something emotional for us. And we have to put that part of ourselves aside in order to help hold someone else's hand to get to where they need to be, either as individuals or as organizations. And so that's going to have a price on us. That is a tax that we have to pay. So if we need to talk about that, give us the space to be able to share, you know, our ups and downs, our joys and our sorrows with you, and just listen, right? You don't need to interject, you know, unless we say, you know, what do you think, you know, but give us some space to share that, because it's heavy. And some of us, you know, choose to share it, some of us don't, you know, and that's okay. There is no right or wrong. But if we do choose to share that information, give us a bit of grace. So essentially, let us come home, and then you can talk to us. But then, you know, when we want to talk to you, give us that space and that grace to be able to share that with you. And understand that although we're DEI experts, we are also just human beings too, just trying to get through this, as I said, evolution like everybody else.
And you know what, Bertine, this takes us to the next question that I'm thinking about, and it's, how do you recommend, or how do you like reconcile with the fact of like combating the guilt over self-care? Because I know like you're a mom, I'm a mom, and we have a whole lot going on, but do you ever battle that those guilty feelings of taking time out for yourself, and even more so in this role? Do you have any guilty feelings sometime about self-care?
I'm loving your question, Valerie, so much. Let me tell you this, and I'm dating myself like immensely right now, but when I was younger, I remember coming home and there was this talk show called Phil Donahue that would come on when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And Phil Donahue said something, right? He was awesome. He said something that resonated with me, I think, since I was 11 years old, I think. He said, guilt is a useless emotion. And can I tell you, that has stayed with me my entire life, because, and I'm somebody who grew up Catholic, so they've got a huge guilt component, you know, in that part of religion, right? And that is something that I wholeheartedly reject. Now, having said that, that's my intellectual perspective, but my emotional perspective, of course, as a parent, you're going to be like, oh my goodness, I should be doing this, I should be doing that. But here's something else that I've learned. Kids, of course, listen to what we say, but more importantly, they do what we do. So I had to ask myself, do I want to raise my son with that sense of guilt about just trying to be, exist, and by being and existing, happiness and self-care components thereof, right? And so I'm like, okay, I don't want to be the do as I say parent only. I want to be the do as I do parent, right? So that means, again, intentionality. And so I had to reevaluate my relationship with guilt. And I also decided that I'm the boss of me, and guilt was an employee that served no purpose. So I had to let guilt go, because it does no one any good. And so I don't feel guilty at all. And I'm going to tell you straight up, on Mother's Day in this house, I told them I want one thing. I want to be left alone. I want to be fed. And I want to watch my shows. And you know what?
Yeah.
To their credit, that's what they do. But of course, you know, I want hugs and kisses and all that. But I'm like, Mom's not cooking today. I'm staying at home, or I'm going out for something to treat myself. Like, you know, at first, like some moms I spoke to, they were like, are you serious? You don't want to be bothered? And then when we had some real talk, they were like, wow, I really don't want to be bothered either. And it's not because you don't love the family, but Mother's Day is every day, right? I honestly consider it such a joy to be not only a mom, but a mom of this particular child who I feel was chosen for me. Right. So I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having said that, that's a job that never ends. I would like a day off. Right.
Yeah.
Go hang out with your daddy. I would like a day off. So, you know, on a serious note, you know, intellectually, guilt serves no purpose. Emotionally, it is a burden that need not be carried. And so my relationship with guilt is one of non-existent at this point. Right. And that's to say, we all started feeling guilty about something. But if something doesn't serve me well, serve my health well, serve my peace of mind well, serve my family well, then it's something that I need not hold on to.
Yeah. Yeah.
So quit feeling guilty, y'all.
Yeah, I know. I know that is the final word. Stop feeling guilty. I like what you said. I was watching Phil Donahue too back in the day, so I'm dating myself.
That's right.
And
that's right.
I'm dating myself,
he was amazing.
I love it. He really, guilt is a useless emotion. I got to remember that. So this is the time of the show that I really hate, because we're coming to an end. But this has been amazing. I know that the listeners should have gotten lots of tips and strategies on self care and DEI professionals, and like I said, just in general about the profession and in general about self-care. But I want to ask you in this lightning round of questions, just one question, and that is, what book are you currently reading, or even one that you recently finished?
Oh, okay. So one of the books that I'm currently reading is called Why We Gather. And it is a book by Priya Parker. And I have the title wrong. It's The Art of Gathering. Yeah, The Art of Gathering.
Okay.
And so Priya Parker wrote this book, and she's an author that a friend of mine recommended to me. And it's a way of understanding, you know, what brings joy and fulfillment to any meeting, because I have conferences and I attend conferences, and I think a book like that, and it's especially why I started it, you know, around this time. Ironically, I bought it some time ago, and now with, you know, this evolution, as I said, that we're going through with COVID and quarantine, and honestly, relearning ways to engage one another, to be present in each other's space, be it virtual or otherwise, this book, I think, is really transformative and poignant. And so what I also like about it is that I'm not even finished with it, but what I also like about it is that it prepares us to look at meetings and the reasons we come together with a different eye, right? So when we do get back to meeting in person, you know, we can understand why those meetings are important. We can understand, maybe I should, you know, do X, Y, and Z, or we can look at the meeting a little bit differently. So next summit that you have, be it virtual or in person, you may come away with some insights that help you even be further engaged as a leader within those meetings.
Oh, okay. I love it. I'm going to have to check that out. The Art of Gathering. Okay.
Yeah, it'll be Art of Gathering with Priya Parker.
Parker. Okay, thank you. And Bertine, tell the listeners where they can find you. I believe you have a book coming out as well. So tell us about that. Tell us where we can find you on social media, so forth and so on.
Oh, thank you so much, Valerie. Thank you. Well, my newest book, my fourth book, is coming out on July 31st. It's currently available for pre-order. It's called Global Fluency 2, Allyship in Action. It is the component to Global Fluency, 50 Tips for Creating a Culturally Competent and Inclusive Professional Environment. So it's basically a how-to book on how to be an ally, and it looks at various industries, be it healthcare, education, corporate America. It looks at various underrepresented groups, such as the LGBTQ community, LEP populations. And so that you can find on our website under the books, under the resources tab. And so the company website is westgrouptraining.com. You can also reach out to me on LinkedIn, and that is Bertine Crevecore West. If you look up Bertine, I should pop up. There are not too many of us out there. I'm also on, right? Thanks, Mom and Dad, for that. I'm also on Instagram at Westbridge Solutions LLC, and I'm also on Facebook at Westbridge Solutions.
All right. Thank you very much, Bertine, for joining me today. Like I said, this has been an awesome show. I've learned a lot, as I always do with my guests. It's amazing. I love the work that I do, and the show has been like the others. I just come away learning so much, and I know that our listeners have learned a lot as well. And I want to thank the listeners for tuning in today. Remember, we're here every Monday at 7 o'clock p.m. If you need to reach out to me for transition coaching, speaking, change management, and diversity, equity, and inclusion support, please do so by email at info@valerieashfordbrown.com. And you can check my website as well, the same name, www.valerieashfordbrown.com. And if it's absolutely urgent, feel free to call me at 240-681-9375. I want to thank you all once again for listening to the Women Boldly Living podcast, where you not only survive, but you thrive in this thing called life. Thank you and have a good day.